At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 9 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast. I am your host, Neil Reynolds. Hope you're enjoying the series so far. If you are, please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. Now, the observant among you will notice that this episode is not about Around the NFL podcast host Dan Hanzus. My dear friend will have to wait. That was before I was reminded how quickly things can change in the NFL. Earlier this summer, I'd pre-recorded an episode with San Francisco 49ers running back Raheem Mostert, who has a great story to tell. The plan was to drop that episode close to the start of the 2020 season, but that plan has changed. So before we started this interview, I explained to Raheem, as I do with all our guests, that we're not about the current headlines on the Neil Reynolds podcast. Raheem, when we get going, so this is basically, it's just going to be kind of us chatting about stories and your story to where you've got to. I'm not looking for sort of news headlines or breaking news. It's just taking off the helmet, letting people know about you. So it's the more stories you can tell like that, be great. All right.
Perfect. All right. Sounds great, Neil.
But last week, one of the breakout players of last season dropped a bombshell on the 49ers by demanding a trade. We're not here to talk about Raheem's current predicament. This is a podcast about NFL life stories, after all. But with everything going on between him and the 49ers, we're getting this episode out now before it dates itself any further. Who knows? Raheem may not even be a 49er by the time you listen to this. So let's get to a remarkable career. Raheem was cut by 6 different teams before starring with the 49ers in 2019. We begin with Raheem talking about growing up in the shark bite capital of the world. So I asked if he had any nasty encounters with jaws when he was younger.
Yeah, I actually do. So when I was about like 14 or 15, I actually encountered my first shark. Thankfully nobody that I was with, or myself included, got bit by the shark. But we were out surfing one morning. Morning tide is usually the good time to go catch some serious waves. And as I was waiting for a wave, I see a fin literally float right in front of me, about, I would say, like 2.5-3 feet away from me, the tip of my board. And at that moment, I was just so scared. I didn't know what to do. But I asked my friends, what should I do? And they were like, Raheem, whatever you do, do not panic. Do not freak out, because if you freak out, they'll think that you're food and you're a little fish, and they'll go and try to, attack you. And so the best thing I did at the moment was just put my feet right up on the board and just sit like I was some little child. That was my closest interaction that I've had with a shark.
So after shark infested surfing, I mean, the NFL is going to be a breeze then, right? No problem.
Yeah. No problem. Definitely.
Was football a big part of your life growing up? Were you always fast as a child? Did you always play football from an early age?
Oh yeah, I definitely did. I started playing football at the age of 7. I was watching at the time Ricky Williams play, all the greats at running back play, and I wanted to be a guy that, can go on the field and score touchdowns. And actually, true story, my first ever position was D lineman. I was wearing number 61 when I first started. that just tells you right there that I wasn't really I didn't have all the ability, and I had to work my way up and, get better. And that's something that I've always cherished throughout my life in this game of football.
No one likes those numbers in the 60s, Raheem. At least you got into one of the cool numbers, right?
You're right.
Did you ever consider Did you ever consider a career in track and field? Because obviously you had that incredible speed. Well, what made you choose football?
Yeah, actually, I started track and field my junior year in college, and it just manifests into, you know, my junior year in high school. And then it just manifests into college. You know, I always use speed as an outlet, and track was that ability for me to go out there and to, you know, compete on my own, and not worry about a team sport, even though it is a team sport when you're talking about points and stuff like that at the end of the meets. But yeah, just going in and stuff like that and working out and getting faster, it was definitely a big part of my life. And I did try to pursue a career in track, but I had another story. So coming out of college, 2015, I was offered to run for Team USA in the Pan American Olympics, which was going to be hosted that summer in Canada. And I was looking into, you know, potentially doing it, but I also wanted to play ball because that was my first passion. And yeah, that was something that I really thought about. You know, I talked to my wife, and she was my girlfriend at the time, and she was like, hey, you know, do what you love, no matter what route you go, you know, just always give it your best foot. And that's something that I always take into consideration, especially with track. You know, it's an individualized sport, and, you know, like I said, it's a team sport as well, and it's a lot of fun.
Who was faster back in the day, you or Tyreek Hill?
Tyreek definitely had the upper advantage just because he got a better place than I did when we did race in the same meet back in 2014. Yeah. So he definitely won the race, and he moved on to advance in the indoor championship in the 200, and fortunately I did it.
You had a good final year in college at running back. You had four good years as a kick returner. NFL.com labeled you as the fastest guy in NCAA football that year. Why do you think you weren't drafted? And did you kind of use that as motivation? Tell us about everyone has a draft story. I mean, you didn't get drafted, but everyone still has a story around the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great question, Neil. So I just kind of took it as a challenge, but more so as one of those things where, you know, coming out, I didn't have a lot of stats through my 4 years at a specific position. You know, not too many guys will be getting drafted as a special teams player in the league. And so that was, you know, it was an unfortunate event for me not getting drafted, but it also was a blessing. You know, I was able to pick a team that I wanted to go to that I felt like was going to give me the better advantage of playing and starting at an early age, early on in my career. And, you know, I was able to, like I said, pick a team to try to grow from and to learn and see how the league operates and, you know, all that type of stuff.
Now, Raheem's path has been anything but straightforward. Before making a name for himself in San Francisco, he was cut by Philadelphia, Miami, Baltimore, Cleveland, the New York Jets, and Chicago in a turbulent 14 months. But he kept trying. So how did he keep going? How did he keep getting back up, believing in his ability, and feeling like he belonged in the NFL?
One of the things that helped me keep going was, you know, my why. So when I was in Philly, you know, I had a great guy. His name was Patty, and he was a mental strength coach. You know, he coached me, you know, mentally wise. We had workshops and stuff like that when I was in Philly. And one of the things that he taught me was, you know, no matter what, you know, your life goals are, you know, and what you want to accomplish, you're always going to have those failures. And as a man, you want to go ahead and build off those failures. And for me, That was the case. You know, when I was getting cut by so many teams, I looked at it as a positive instead of a negative. You know, just in life, when you're roaming around, you know, you're looking for a job, and you know, you're getting these interviews, and you're not getting the right job that you want. And you know, it's just a learning tool for you. It's an opportunity for you to perfect your craft and whatever the case may be, and then you can learn from that. And so that's what I took into account when Patty was teaching me, you know. Don't worry about what's going on behind the scenes. All you can see right now is in front of you and the ultimate goal. You know, yeah, I was cut by six teams, and it finally took that seventh team to realize what type of player I am and the mentality that I bring to this game, you know. But also, it's also one of those things where I just like to go out there and play and do my thing and have fun and not look back at the mistakes and you know, just learn from them. And one of the sayings that he also taught me was, hey, never make the same mistake twice. Because if you make the same mistake twice, that means that something negative is going to happen, or you just can't bounce back from that second action. And that's the case for excuse me, a situation like mine.
Did you ever dread telling your family, you know, driving home again, and you're going to tell your wife or your partner, you're going to tell, hey, we're moving again, or I got cut again? Was there, take us into that personal story, because every transaction has a personal element to it. Did you, any of those where you kind of dreaded it driving home?
Yeah, it was, my first experience when I got released from Philly, well, when I got picked up from Philly on practice squad and I got released, you know, I was staying in a hotel at the time, the team hotel, and I wasn't too sure how I was gonna tell my wife, my girlfriend at the time. She was so excited and anxious as well on that same cut date, you know. She knew that I put in so much work and tried to put my best foot forward, because she could see it, you know. It just changed me mentally, and so. When I had got released, you know, that phone call, I called her and basically told her, hey, look, I'm sorry, first and foremost. I felt like I've been a failure, not being able to make a roster. But they're going to give me a second chance, and, I'm just gonna have to perform at a high level and practice and, you know, help the team the best way I can. And one thing that she told me was, you know, This is a minor setback for a major comeback. You're always gonna be a resilient man, and we're gonna get through this together. And she's been by my side ever since, man. Just get me through all the cuts and all the things that have happened in my life. She's always been there. And that's why I try to tell people, you know, try to find a person that, you know, helps motivate you in the way where you can grow and you can succeed as a couple, because at the end of the day, and that's all you need from each other is passion and love, and that's what we have.
I'm not going to ask you to name names, because I'm not interested in making headlines here. I'm interested in the story and how it is for you as a player. Do some teams deal with the release of players better than others? And you don't have to name names.
Some teams, I kind of generalize, you know, them all together, just because of what I was going through at the time. You know, when I was getting cut by teams, the teams would just flat out tell me, hey, look, it was a roster move, or, it's salary based. You know, they would never tell me, hey, look, you stunk on this play, and this play ultimately got you the boot, you know. Your play was not up to par, you know. I would rather them tell me that instead of, you know, hey, it's a roster move. A guy got injured at one position, and so we had to let you go so that way we could fill another spot in. And it's like, you know, I'd rather have them tell me, hey, look, you know, you didn't perform at this level. Just go back to the drawing boards, because that'll give me more motivation to go out there and perfect my craft and to try to help me progress onto the next team.
Those teams who gave up on him motivate Raheem to this day. He carries a list of the six clubs who cut him, and he looks at it on every game day in the NFL.
I always look at that list. That's priority when I'm on game day, man. And, you know, I just look at that list and I use it more so as motivation and happiness. You know, I can go through each city that I've joined, the team that I've joined, organization I've been a part of. And, you know, I like to look at the greater things, the outcome, you know, what happened. You know, yeah, I did get cut from that team, but I also met this person, and this person was a big part of my life. Like I mentioned, Patty, the mental coach, you know, he was a big part of my life. So I just go back and be like, hey, look, I was in Philly. I met Patty. Oh, this is what Patty taught me. And then go back to what he taught me. And you know, okay, when it's game day, then I'm going to use this technique that he taught me and go from there. So I just try to take bits and pieces of you know, the different teams and organizations that I was a part of and use it as motivation on game day.
Did you ever start to think about a different career, or did you not allow yourself to think that way?
You know, there was definitely doubt. I asked my wife, you know, after about like my fourth or fifth time getting cut, you know, I asked her, hey, you know, what do you see me doing in the future? Because I feel like this is just not working out for me. And I had a heart to heart with her, and she basically just told me, hey, look, just keep going, you know, don't stop. You know, this is, if it's something that you love and you care about the most, just find that energy, find that drive. So that way you can succeed the way you want and be prosperous in the sport, because I can see it in your eyes. You know, you love this game and you'll do anything for it. So why not just keep going, keep pushing? And that's what helped me get through what I get through on a daily basis.
After being locked out of the NFL for so long, Raheem Mostert was a big part of the 49ers team that would reach last season's Super Bowl. So what was that 2019 campaign like?
It was definitely a whirlwind. You know, I was coming into the season as a fourth running back. You know, not really having much of a role in the offense, but, you know, special teams is my attribute and something that I would love to contribute as far as any team's concerned. And one of the things that helped me, you know, coming into that season was just be ready, stay ready, because injury may happen. A guy can go down, you know, a specific play might be called for me. I just got to make sure that when my number's called, that I can go out there and I can perform at a high level. And so 2019, the season's kicked off, and you know, I'm getting touches here and there, but it was more so just going in there and just having fun, man, and not thinking about where I'm at on the depth chart or you know, what I can't control. I'm only gonna be able to control what I can control, and it was so much fun last year. You know, even to make it to the Super Bowl, you want to win the Super Bowl, that's the ultimate goal, but you know, you still have a fight to go out there, and you have to battle each day, and week by week, man, month by month, and the year last year, it was just so much fun, and I can't wait till this season comes up and we're able to do the same thing, if not more. And you know, especially me, I'm excited, man, more motivated than ever.
Yeah, how do you guard against, let's take the NFC Championship game, 220 rushing yards, historic day for you, and in NFL terms, second best rushing performance in the playoffs, 4 rushing touchdowns. How do you guard against that being the end of your story? Because if this was a movie of your life, that could very easily have been the end of your story, right? But now you want it to be the beginning, I guess.
Yeah. You know, it's just, to me, I just see it as a Kickstarter, you know, being able to do what I did last year and even in that NFC Championship game and even scoring a touchdown in the Super Bowl, and that's a big deal. A lot of people, a lot of running backs aren't able to say they've been able to do that. So, you know, I just feel like it's just the start of my chapter, man. You know, I'm in control of my book, and I got a lot more pages that I want to be written, you know, in stone and stuff like that, and go out there and, like I said, perform at a high level. And it just gives me courage and more motivation to the upcoming season and the years to come. To go out there and have fun.
What was that Super Bowl experience like? When you think about where you came from and then suddenly you're at all the media sessions, there's hundreds of journalists covered around your podium. And yeah, and so take us through that week and then obviously losing the game. For you, is that like a driver now for 2020?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, you know. So, yeah, it's definitely a drive, motivation. You know, I feel like we're unsettled. It's something that we want to accomplish, man, and get done, you know, going week by week, play these games and get back to the big dance and win it this time. But that whole week, man, was just so different, you know, just with the media. There's only two teams left. You know, every player is basically on high alert with media and every move they make, you know, but at the same time, you got to realize that it is the, you know, one of the biggest events in the world. And, you know, you got millions of people watching, and for me, I wanted to lay low, you know, do my media day, but also get in my zone. And, you know, when game day comes, I was going to be prepared, which I was, you know, but like I said, it was so much fun, man. And it's an experience that can never be matched. And like I said, I can't wait to get back to that. And so that way, this time we win it.
It was a lovely moment in the tunnel afterwards. Yourself and Damian Williams, you were both together in Miami. We saw the footage of you guys hugging and exchanging jerseys, and it just spoke of a brotherhood that the NFL has. Was that a special moment for you? And do you think it kind of speaks to how kind of all players are on the same page around the league?
Yeah, it was definitely a big moment for me, just because I know, you know, where we both came from. You know, I know our different backgrounds and how we were both in Miami together, how, you know, a lot of people overlooked both of us. And then we go on separate teams and we prosper the way we do. And, you know, he, in my opinion, should have won the MVP award for the Super Bowl just because of outstanding play that he was displaying the entire game. But that moment in the tunnel, man, I'll never forget. You know, he was he had the courage to come to me and, you know, even congratulate me, even though, you know, their team beat our team. But, you know, he came up to me and said, "Man, you came a long way. You know, you can't let this one defeat, you know, basically define your career." And that's something that, you know, I try not to think about, just because there's a lot more ahead of me. And for him to come up to me and want to swap jerseys and stuff like that at a moment that was just so big for him, just because, like I said, he's a Super Bowl champ. And I didn't want to see the confetti fall. That was one of the things, you know, I told myself. Not that I'm a, you know, my sportsmanship is at a low, but I just, like I said, being a competitor, man, and you know, I congratulate them for, you know, their success, and I'm happy for them, especially Damian. But I just couldn't see that confetti fall. And so for him to come up to me and, you know, not even care about the confetti in itself, you know, his colors, and come up and talk to me, man, is something that, you know, is very near and dear to my heart, just because, like I said, I this game we play is for the brotherhood and the camaraderie and, you know, things that people deal with outside of the world. You know, we come together, and there's guys in that locker room that come from all different types of walk of life and all different backgrounds and ethnicities, and for us to come together like that, and I mean, it just shows you the type of brotherhood that goes on within the league and that carries on throughout.
I've always wondered that about the Super Bowl, when you see the winning team under the confetti and with the losing team, it's like a race for the tunnel. I mean, I guess you want that moment to be yours. You don't want to be under somebody else's confetti. You just kind of alluded to it there.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those, man. You know, I congratulate everyone, you know, win, loss, or draw. But for me, I would rather just go and take my loss into the tunnel and, you know, learn from my mistakes and try to see how I can, right away, my mindset was, hey, I'm going to be back here and I'm going to do twice as better than I did this game. And that's just my mindset. And yeah, I'm not a poor sport. I do love this game, but when you're in the moment, you know, you don't necessarily want to I just didn't want to allow myself to see that confetti, because it would have hurt me, man. It would have crushed me more so. But like I said, I congratulated them, and they did a great job winning the game. And You know, if the guys on it, I wanted the guys to have their moment, man, the champs to have their moment. And so, you know, I felt like by me not going and congratulating them after the game was giving them their moment, because I would want my moment, you know, my son and my wife.
Now, as we discussed in the introduction to this episode, Raheem's future with the 49ers isn't clear. Regardless, his outstanding displays in 2019 mean he's going to be much more involved wherever he plays in 2020. And throughout this offseason, Mostert has been working hard to adapt his body to the rigors of the NFL and to improve himself as a player.
I'm not trying to get bigger. I'm trying to get more lean, you know, my body. Usually I'm at like a 6% body fat, but I was actually wanting to get a little bit smaller and gain some more muscle, so that way those hits won't you know stick to me as much as they would normally. But yeah, I'm just trying to stay, be in my best form and my best fit as best as possible, so that way, you know, I do understand that I have a bigger load coming ahead, but I'm excited and I can't wait for it.
I was feeling pretty good about myself, Raheem. I was having a good day, and then I'm talking to a man with 6% body fat. Now I'm questioning what I've done with my life.
Yeah. It's hard, man. It's definitely hard.
I bet it is. Last couple. You must have quite an unselfish running back room in San Francisco, because second best rushing attack in the NFL last year, but no 1,000-yard rusher. You all kind of got the job done. What's it like in that group? And I guess maybe tell me what it's like working in Kyle Shanahan's scheme, because some of those holes you were running through were beautiful.
Yeah. Man, the brotherhood, you know, in that room is unmatched, you know. I call them my brothers, man. If blood couldn't make us any closer. That's just how I see it. Like, we're just so close, man. We all hang out. You know, we're all kind of somewhat sad about, you know, one of our brothers being traded to the Dolphins and Matt Breida. But, you know, that's the way the business works, and we understand that. But we still talk to this day, and we still keep in contact with Matt, and we tell him that we love him and stuff like that. And, you know, we're excited for him because, you know, he has an opportunity to go out there and get the starting role and expanding his role and, you know, even getting a paycheck, you know, something that we're all looking forward to in the years to come. But yeah, man, it's just, it all started with our head coach too, but our running backs coach, our position coach, Coach Turner, man, he instilled in us,
he's a legend,
you know, family.
Right?
Yeah, legend. He instilled in us family and what it means to, you know, stick together, win, lose, or draw. You know, the first 2 years with Kyle Shanahan, you know, the whole era, we didn't have, you know, the winning record. We were last in a lot of categories, and, you know, it just wasn't seeing like we were for the near future that we were going to be in the Super Bowl like we were last year. And for us, we just took into account, hey, look, we're family. You know, this is what we do. You know, we're going to go out there and we're going to bust our tails each and every day, each and every week, every Sunday, every Thursday, every Monday, just because I'm going to fight for my brother and I know my brother's going to fight for me. And then that's how, you know, the relationships build. And that's what you call a brotherhood.
And the offense that Coach Shanahan schemes up for you, is it an exciting one to be a part of?
Oh yeah, definitely, man. You know, it's very lengthy. His words are very lengthy, you know, when you get in the play call, but, you know, there's always there's a method to his madness. Let's just say that, he does a great job getting guys in open space and calling the correct plays and the reads and the runs. And we all just go out there and we just try our best. And last year, man, those holes they were opening up like the Red Sea, you know. Just so fun to watch. And even watching other running backs go in there and hitting big gains and stuff like that, man, it's so exciting.
Last one. What do you like to do away from football? obviously, when you're an NFL player, you're in this goldfish bowl, and you might find yourself in even more of a goldfish bowl in the coming years. You certainly hope to put yourself in that situation. So how do you decompress? How do you get away?
Yeah, that's a great question, Neil. So I like to hang out with my family. You know, my son, he's actually about to turn one in a couple of days, on the 22nd. So I'm excited to watch him grow, man, and to see him, you know, become into a little kid, man, and a little Raheem, you know. It's something special. But I like to hang out with my family, my wife, and we like to cook, grill. I definitely like to grill. But I also like to go outside, do outside things, take a walk with the family. If I had a boat, you know, I'd definitely be on the boat right about now. I'd probably be doing this interview on the boat.
But next time.
Yeah, but I like doing all types of things, man. I like just hanging out, being, you know, good vibes, having great people around me, man. I mean, heck, even going to grab a beer with the neighbor is something that I like to do too, you know. But unfortunately, right now, we can't because of the whole virus, and it's kind of putting a damper on everything. But yeah, I like to do all kinds of things, man. I'm a people person.
It makes you appreciate the simple things when you can't do them anymore. I guess you could. Yeah. Great lesson for your son: never give up. You could point to your NFL career and.
Yep. Exactly. Absolutely.
Now, we did this interview across a video link with Raheem, who was at home in America at the time. In the background, there was a huge framed picture of a lion, and I couldn't let Raheem go without asking him about it.
Oh, lion? Actually, my wife found that, and she decided that it should be in the office. But, I mean, there's a lot of different meanings for a lion, you know. For me, I got the lion, and then you can also see my... There's a picture of my son from the NFC Championship game holding him up. So those two things right there, you know, just empower what it means to be a leader. And at the same time, you know, what it means to have somebody look up to you like my son and to share those moments, man. It's something that I always take into account, man, no matter what. Even being a father, just appreciate all the little things in life and never give up and all the hope and dreams that you have and the aspirations that you want to accomplish, man. They're right down the road from you. You just got to put a little bit of work in to get to them. So
I guess you're never going to take it for granted, are you? If you have a bad training camp practice or it's 100 degrees and you don't want to run a couple of sprints at the end of practice, you're in the NFL. You're doing what you got kicked out of 6 times. So you're never going to take this for granted, are you?
Oh, yeah, you can't take anything for granted, man, no matter what. It's all about passion and heart, and if you love something, you'll do anything for it.
So there you are. That's my conversation with Raheem Mostert. I've never spoken to Raheem before, one of the nicest guys I've ever met, and certainly wish him well. Obviously, we'll have to monitor his progress. Yeah, sorry, things have had to change on the fly, but that's the NFL for you. And yeah, I think he's going to have a big season wherever he plays in 2020. So let's bring in producer Gary Hayes as we go into the mailbag. Gary, how are you, mate?
Hi, Neil. Good. Thanks for having me on again.
My pleasure.
So we've got some questions this week, just a standard three that we normally go with. The first one is from Jordan Barrett, and he asks you, are there any questions in interviews that you wish you had asked, but you didn't? So are there any stones you wish you flipped over when you had the chance face to face with someone?
It's really hard to think off the top of my head, you know, times when I didn't kick that stone over. So I think I think the only way I can answer that is to say that you come away from every interview and you might glance down at your notebook and you'll be like, okay, well, I didn't get to that, or I didn't get to this part of it. And, you know, I think that's just natural when you're doing so many interviews. Often I'm doing, as I've said before, I'm doing so many in training camp. You roll from one player to the next, then you drive from one city to the next, and it's one after the other after the other. But also, an interview for me is not just a list of questions that need to be ticked off. It's a conversation. So sometimes a conversation goes down a different route. I probably have over the years. I can't think of any that spring to mind, Gary, as you're saying that. But I'm sure with every interview, I don't hit every question that's in my notebook because you never know which way a conversation is going to go.
Mm. Okay. One from Craig Evans. NFL Europe blast incoming. Do you miss the NFL Europe? What were your best or worst memories? Do you imagine a situation where it comes back? Did you have a favourite team from the league?
Ooh, that's about five questions there, isn't it? Yes, I miss NFL Europe. I absolutely loved it. So I started watching NFL Europe games as a fan. So my first love in that league was the London Monarchs, who became the England Monarchs. I then went to cover the sport as a journalist and then worked as the public relations manager for the league for 6 years. And so every Saturday in the season, I would get up, fly to Germany or to the Netherlands or to Spain or up to Scotland, cover a game, then fly home first thing Sunday morning. And it just became this great routine of going around Europe watching American football games. I did love it. Some of my favorite memories were the World Bowl finals, the championship games in Frankfurt and Dusseldorf. You got 50,000 Germans all completely beared up and singing Hey Baby at the top of their voices. It was fantastic. I loved it. Great atmosphere, really fun party atmosphere. Probably the worst memories were kind of the end of the England Monarchs. The last few years, they were getting crowds at Crystal Palace of about 2,000 people. I've said this before, you know, we'd be staring at the gates 2 minutes before kickoff, hoping more people were going to come in, and they didn't. And Kurt Warner was on the field competing against the Monarchs, and you can't get more than 2,000 people there. So, and I think that's why it won't come back in England if it comes back. I think it would not be seen as the real deal like the regular season games we have now. I think regular season games will expand into Germany, so I don't think it would return to Germany, but I do think a farm system, a development league is needed for the NFL. They're absolutely crying out for it to test run their quarterbacks and offensive linemen. That was what NFL Europe was great for. There's a kind of group of us that all worked on NFL Europe, Brian Baldinger being one of them, as you heard when we did that podcast episode. We have a real passion for it and we love it. And I think we miss it even till today.
Okay. Last question from Oliver Lawrenson. He asks, as one of the main ambassadors or leaders in pushing the NFL in the UK, what do you find as the biggest challenges in your role? And he adds, keep up the good work on Sky and this podcast, which I added at the very end there.
biggest challenges. Getting fans to believe that I'm not responsible for everything from ticket sales to things that go wrong with Game Pass to game selections on Sky. I do actually have a say in the game selections on Sky, so you can give me some stick for that one. So I guess it's that is one challenge. I think another one, and this is just the environment, this is business. This is just business. I don't run budgets and I don't have to run budgets. But I have great ideas. So, you know, I want to bring over X amount of guests or certain guests on Sky. And they're like, well, we can't afford that guy. That's ridiculous. I was like, yeah, but I'm just about the content. I'm just about creating great content. Or I want to go on tour every week for NFL UK live stage shows. Was that's not realistic from a budget point of view. So you can have a wonderful amount of ideas about how to grow the game, but you also have to be realistic and, I guess, work towards other people's budgets. Maybe it was my money I was in charge of. I wouldn't want to spend it so quickly. But as it's everybody else's, I'm quite happy to.
Speaking of budgets, can I ask you a question?
Wow, that's a dangerous setup. I'm going to say yes, but with a
it's not a personal great deal question. It's not a personal question. But as you know, I love Patrick Mahomes. So quick question, in 10 seconds, is he worth $500 million?
Yes, he is. He's the real deal. He's going to have the Chiefs in Super Bowl contention for the next decade or more. He hasn't broken Kansas City's bank either. He's got more than enough money that he can live off and his family can live off for the rest of his life. He didn't go silly with it. It was a win-win. I liked it.
Excellent. And dare I ask who we have coming up next on the podcast?
Well, waiting patiently in the wings is Dan Hanzus, host of the Around the NFL podcast. Stop me if you've heard this before. Dan will definitely be our next guest unless something else happens in the NFL and we have to change things up. But as it stands right now, I can say It will be Dan Hansus from the Around the NFL podcast on July the 30th. So, yeah, thanks, Gary, for everything, all your sterling work. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And stay safe. Enjoy the summer weather. And we'll see you on the 30th. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds. Our producer is Gary Hayes, while Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Special thanks to junior producer Henry Smith and everyone else involved in helping us put this episode together. The Neil Reynolds Podcast is a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.